we usually jump back and forth, because you sent me this text from LaRouche talking about synergy, I wanted to link that with what we were talking about, the layers of reality, what is the red pill in I and them that goes deeper than others in the explanation of things and the weirdness or the complexity of what's really going on, that mostly is not seen, is the hidden ground. And another part of the FAPA program was always to try to educate the people, and he was always complaining that there is a lack of musical literacy. And I usually try to link with a little of music history, and hopefully to motivate people to explore those things on their own. And because of the Synarchy text, LaRouche talks about Mozart and Emperor Joseph II a lot, because they were both trying to fight these hidden groups that control and program the environment. And LaRouche says there is this aristocratic or hidden societies that are controlling, for example, the drug trafficking, and that's why he doesn't like rock and roll, because he thinks it was created to serve these groups. And he also says they always control the environment with controlled conflict. And he goes to Mozart and to the Emperor Joseph II because they were somehow revolting against this group. Mozart was, we already said before, like the sap of his time. He and Beethoven went to the salons in the court of Vienna, and they studied not only Bach, his music, the tonal laws, the harmonies, and the concepts he had about the tonality being like the sun and the other notes like the planets around it. And that's the time of the absolute kings, the power. And it is said that the Sun King went to Chambord, and there he got his idea of the Sun King in the double helix stairs. He thought the king is the sun, and everything is, everything is around his majesty. And for example, they had this laws with the stars, with the stairs. The king, Frank, he will go all the way down the stairs if he met like an equal, like another emperor, like Charles V. He will go all the way down. But if he met another prince, he will go only down until half the stairs. And if it was somebody who was a little man, the little man had to go up. He had to ascend to find him, but he will not ascend to him. So there is all these types of allegories also in the court about ascension. LaRouche said...
Here, let me give a little... let me give a history of... I just looked up synarchy. Let me just give a little definition as LaRouche defines it. Under the title of The Cult of Napoleon, it says, at its core, the Synarchist International like its front group, Pan-European Union, sought to create a one-world tyranny modeled on the reign of Napoleon Bonaparte. The first Synarchist text was written in the 1860s by Joseph Alexander St. Yves Delvedre, 1842 to 1909, an occultist and follower of Napoleon Bonaparte's own mystical advisor, Antoine Faber d'Olivet, 1767 to 1825. Faber d'Olivet had started out as a leading member of the Jacobins, participating personally in the foiled assassination plot against King Louis the 16th in 1789. D'Olivet later served as a top official of the Interior and War Ministries under Napoleon Bonaparte. His occult writings about, quote, purgative violence, unquote, and the will to power, and these are antecedents of the works of Nietzsche, were adopted by St. Yves d'Alvedre, who launched the idea of Synarchism as a counter to the anarchy that had destabilized all of Europe from 1648. St. Yves d'Alvedre's successor, Gerard Vincent Encausse, or known as Papus, founded the St. Yves School of Occult Sciences and began a recruiting drive for a secret society, which he called the Synarchy Government. In his 1894 book, Anarchy, Indolence, and Synarchy, Papus spelled out an ambitious scheme to recruit all the leaders of industry, commerce, finance, the military, and academia to a single power scheme aimed at destroying the, quote, internal microbe, unquote, of society, namely anarchy. So these guys aren't anarchy, synarchy, synthesized anarchy. They are the opposite of anarchy. Both St. Yves and Papus envisioned a global synarchist empire divided into five geographic areas. One, the British Empire. Two, Euro-Africa. Three, Eurasia. Four, Pan-America. Five, Asia. Indeed, Alexander Kojeva is identified in Russian sources as a leader of the so-called Eurasians, a group of Russian emigres in the 1920s, Berlin and Paris, led by Sir Samuel Hors Gukhov, G-U-C-H-K-O-F, and tied into the Soviet secret service project called the Trust. The Eurasians, now it's interesting, Ion mentioned, it seemed to me, the Eurasians, and when we were talking about the castle and the Vatican stuff, and down there in the Pyrenees, if you recall, he said, I wrote it down as Eurasians, but he might have been trying to say Eurasians, because that's the term here. The Eurasians welcomed the Russian Revolution as a purgative force to wipe out corrupt Western civilization. Kojeve's own cosmology of great tyrants counted Joseph Stalin and Adolf Hitler as second only to Napoleon in achieving, quote, the end of history goal of a true global tyranny. Then it says, while none of the American archive documents reviewed to date by LaRouche's organization, none of them identify Nazi jurist Carl Schmitt as a synarchist, circumstantial evidence points to that conclusion. Carl Schmitt was an emissary to Spain, Portugal, France, and Italy during the height of fascism, turning out a series of juridical documents justifying the jackboot tyrannies. Schmitt was a protected asset of Goering, the leading synarchist figure in Nazi Germany. Like the banker Halsjar Schacht, Schmitt was cleared of war crimes by the Nuremberg trials. So that's some of the background. Oh, so then Luce brings it right up.
Yes,
present synarchist guys.
There is another link secret groups that link to San Martin.
Yeah, but let me finish this thread.
And
this Schmitt influenced. Let me finish this point. Schmitt, Nazi Germany guy, he influenced Leo Strauss, who had all these disciples at the University of Chicago in the 80s, who went on to create the plan to have a Pearl Harbor, which many people link into the cause for 9/11. So the article ends, it was this Kojeve guy who maintained the closest collaboration with Leo Strauss, and it promoted his theories of purgative violence and universal tyranny with such leading Strauss disciples as Alan Bloom. Now, Alan Bloom was a professor at the University of Chicago in the 80s who wrote a book called The Closing of the Mind of America, and he had certain platonic ideas of music. Well, Zappa had public debates with Alan Bloom. He ridiculed Alan Bloom's ideas about music. So Zappa comes right in here, And Bloom is influenced by these Nazi guys, according to LaRouche. And Bloom was the mentor of Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz. And also Strauss influenced François Fukuyama, who wrote the famous book in 1900 when the Cold War ended, on the end of history. So then LaRouche ends by saying, the Synarchist stew, this stew, remains Vice President Dick Cheney's gang's French connection. So we can take French connection, and we've got Ion coming in and explaining the hidden ground to the French connection idea, but with a lot deeper interpretations of the Martin and Synarchist. Ion does not see... What?
Yes, yes, I just said San Martin.
The Martinist.
San Martin.
So, right, so you now, so this relates to Zappa, as you put LaRouche's information together with, yeah, go ahead.
With what we found out from Chambord, because,
yes.
I think it's 20 minutes or 10 minutes from Chambord, there is this castle, Beauregard, that always belonged to the San Martin family, and that's the place where Frank will stay, because in Chambord there is no kitchen, and that's another anomaly. Like, what was he really doing there? There is no kitchen, and the court, it was like maybe 3,000 people that will go with him all the time when he went somewhere. So there are a lot of anomalies in this story, but LaRouche explained how the French monarchy was taken down by the Synarchists because they financed the American Revolution, and there is the link to Saint-Germain and all the things I explained at the beginning with the Nazara.
Right.
And
are you saying that the Synarchists were supportive of the French Revolution? American Revolution?
No. No, because they're the monarchy.
But they were worried about
and,
it.
They got angry with the French monarchy because they financed the revolution, and that's why they...
Oh, I see.
They promoted the French Revolution and decapitated the king and the queen. And also... the brother of Marie Antoinette, Joseph II, protected Mozart, and they were both fighting against the absolute kings. They had the new ideals of the Enlightenment and the encyclopedists, and they were for the fraternity, the equality, the liberty, and this was not really liked by the Synarchists. And in the Magic Flute, Mozart, he was really like Zappa. He was like a rock star. He was super eccentric, and he took all aspects of the production, distribution, and performance of his music on his own hands, and that was really revolutionary at the time, because everybody was seen as a servant, and he refused to be a servant of the aristocrats. He wanted to make the music he wanted to make. And with the Emperor Joseph II, he had more freedom. He could use the language of the people, like he suffered the Reign of the Seraya, I think it's called in English. He made it in German because he wanted to transmit to the people these ideas of the revolution. And in the Magic Flute, the story is about a prince that is fighting against a secret society of dark forces. And the prince is fighting to reach the goal of truth and beauty and love. And the queen of the night is like the allegory of these secret societies, and there is also the Russes at the time. The synarchists said man is like any other animal, and they say no, man has something else. He has this aspiration to higher goals, to higher ideals, and they are trying to reduce us to be like animals. And then later on in the 19th century, they also tell you you are descendant from a monkey, and that's the synarchy. But
most of the ideas, what you're saying, what comes to me, most of the humanist ideas, most of the ideas that people consider a sophisticated 20th century person before this century, they knew Darwin was right and the Christian vision was wrong. All of the practical sciences and arts were acting out the synarchist ideas from 300 years ago. That's the point here, right? People don't know that this elite was making them think a certain way. They thought it was an educated, sophisticated way.
And it's interesting how there is like a revolution in the music also mirroring what's going on in the society. And Mozart wanted to go further with his music and to transmit what he thought is the universal truths, the universal beauty. And that was the goal of the encyclopedist. They thought they could make this collection of books with everything you have to know from A to C, to have all the knowledge of man, and the rules, the formulas to create beauty. So they went to retrieve the Greco-Roman, and that's how the academies and the laws of art, the technique, and the ideas that you have to improve on these techniques, that you have to become like a virtuous of these techniques and to create beautiful artworks and following these formulas, these rules that are like eternal. That's how the academies are born, and that's what then the modern and the contemporary artists are fighting against, all these classical academic rules. But at the time of Mozart, they still think there are these eternal, ideal, elegant, logical formulas, and they're trying to find them. And I think in a way he sort of find something, because I mean, when I hear Mozart's music, it's really sublime. And even when he's funny, when he's trying to reach the non-aristocratic, illiterate audience of being, and he does, for example, the Papageno, these two parrots that are in love, and it's funny, but this is always about these higher ideals of fraternity, of truth, of love, and against the absolute power of the kings. And there is a legend. They say that Marie Antoinette and Mozart met when they were children, because Mozart was a virtuoso and he would go play in all the castles, and they fell in love. Some say the Marie Antoinette asked him to marry her after he saw him playing, and others say they met in the gardens and they were playing, and but they were children. And it's funny that how these things develop, because one of the of the things they said against Marie Antoinette when they cut her head. They said she was expending too much money in luxury things, and when they had the trial, she was not expending more than the amount for the court, the normal amount that it was. And most of her expenses were on books and engravings, not like many think, clothing and jewels. She also had that, but most of the expenses she had were on books. She was like a very educated person. And
yeah, did we ever play you what Ion, he did a lot of Marie Antoinette. Have you heard that? You probably haven't, right?
No.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're right. She was born in 1755, and Mozart's born a year later, 1756. He dies in 1791, and she dies in 1793. So they're very close, their lifespans, you know, exactly, almost. And she died on Dave Neufeld's birthday, October 16th. So also the day I made the prediction about the wall, the Berlin Wall going down and Germany being reunited. That was in 1988. So Marie Antoinette was one of the first people Ion gave us the true story about. She would read the fire in the fireplace. She had a psychic something. The fire would talk to her. And she would know everything about everybody, and therefore would give advice to the kings or whoever was listening to her that would be borne out. And no one understood where she got this knowledge, where she got this information. So she became extremely powerful in the court system of that world in France because of her ability to... Now, it was very early. She might have been going to parallel worlds. I'm not sure, but Ion did say she would read... with the fireplace, some voice in the fireplace, sort of like Moses' burning bush, would tell her everything. So she really was a big deal in many ways. She's like Marie Henrietta, who did all those inventions that influenced the 20th century, the wife of Leopold II. So it would. So this reading books would be supplementing what she naturally was getting as a psychic person or some kind of advanced person. So Ion agrees with you.
Yes, and it's very interesting that they linked to Saint-Germain, to the American Revolution. And Mozart is like, exactly like Zappa, he's against this power that the... For Zappa were the big corporations and the media, but at the time of Mozart, it was even harder because he suffered a lot and had a lot of economic financial trouble because it was very, very hard for him to be independent and to fight against this power that even killed Marie Antoinette, the synarchist. And
yeah, the synarchist.
This is,
they would
in
use,
a way, the
Hegelian
type of,
method.
Zappa always said the best music was already made by the people with wings, with the wigs and stuff. And he was referring to Mozart.
Right. Zappa was not impressed with Mozart and Beethoven. He insinuated he didn't like their music because they were created by kings. He thought their music was just what the king wanted. Now, LaRouche comes in and says...
Well, I think...
No, Frank.
He was...
No, let me say this. No, wait. Let me explain this.
The academic rules of composing.
Yeah, but just a minute. Zappa LaRouche would say to Frank, wait a minute, Frank, you don't know the Platonic method in music that Bach and Mozart were following. And then Frank would counter, well, you don't know Marshall McLuhan, and you don't know that visual space and the Aristotelian Platonic models doesn't apply anymore. So that's the battle between LaRouche and Zappa that I spell out in my memoir, Prince Charles. So Zappa is in the mode of adapting music to the new environment. So was Mozart, but the environments are completely different. So Zappa would not be interested in someone who made music for the Gutenberg era, like Mozart and Beethoven did. He'd be interested in music for the digital era. So maybe that's what you meant, but that has to be said, that it doesn't... Mm-hmm. The problem with LaRouche stuff is that he's saying the same... No, it's crafty what LaRouche says. He would agree that the music has to change to adapt to the new technologies. But he thinks there's some method that is Platonic. He called it the hypothesis of the higher hypothesis. And that was what all geniuses were doing. They didn't create the same thing. So you'd have to be careful what LaRouche was saying about Zappa, because Zappa was acting out the LaRouche mandate by being Platonic and dealing with the hypothesis of the higher hypothesis. Now, there's an article, the only article on Zappa in the LaRouche organization was in 71 or so. In their newspaper, their music scholar, it wasn't LaRouche, Christine somebody, she said that Frank Zappa was a replay of a guy in 1920s Germany, maybe even Europe. So it's sort of like a hippie image. He had a commune, and he would go around all over the place in Europe and play interesting music and gypsy lifestyle kind of thing in European culture in the 20s and 30s. She said that's what Frank was doing. Now, Frank, so we know that Frank was not doing that, but LaRouche's organization project their own bias on Frank. So... we don't want to get distracted by arguments between Zappa and LaRouche. I would say that Zappa does the Platonic method in a modern way, as LaRouche would advocate, but LaRouche may not recognize it. So, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Yes. Well, one similarity between Mozart and Zappa is that they really thought they could reach the audience and educate the audience and change the situation with the music. And music was like their religion, what they believed in, and the tool. And also Sonra, he was always saying that he was trying to make people adapt to the new frequency, which is very ionic.
Zappa said that, is what you're saying.
Sonra. But all of
Sonra?
Them had this idea that Sonra.
Oh, Sonra, yeah, Sonra, yeah.
But that music was a very, very strong tool to educate people and to move them to be somehow more aware. And for example, Sean Brass even says, you just listen to this music, and you are going to start to know things.
Yes. You're quoting him. Let me just see, is that Ginny or Greg? Do you have something to say about this topic on Zappa? I know Ginny doesn't like Zappa, so are you here just to listen, to mock us, or what, Greg?
Not to mock you, Bob. We just came back from downtown. We went to see Lewis Black, a comedian who's been around for years, and listened to his shtick. So don't have much to say on this topic, but we do enjoy listening.
Okay, so I'll meet you again. All right, so so you sent me a bunch of stuff, Roxy. You have here, you wrote to me, Synergy and the Satellite Conductors. You say Mozart, Zappa, Sun Ra, all of them created their own universe, taking all aspects of production and distribution into their own hands. LaRouche says they didn't like the brother. Who didn't like the brother? The Synarchists. So LaRouche says the Synarchists, the oligarchy, didn't like the brother of Marie Antoinette supporting Mozart. And the fact the French monarchy supported the American independence. So even they see the kings can be, this is LaRouche's point, is that the real power is in the fondue, which is plural for fondue, which is the cash, gold, credit nexus. So the visual space of the wealth that banking created, that was the oligarchy. So it was like an object. And the children of the oligarchy had the benefits of that wealth, but if they went politically off the range, off the grid, they were easily killed or poisoned. So you can have a king come in who, even though he's an oligarch and represents the traditional elitism, he can be trying to alter his environment, working with the culture geniuses of his day, to bring in a more egalitarian situation. So the French monarchs were decapitated, and people might think, oh, that's Robespierre and the people's rebels, the Jacobins, that they were offing all the elites. And LaRouche's point is that another part of the elite, known as the Synarchists, were supporting the radical Robespierre and these guys who were creating chaos and ruining the American Revolution that was being presented by others that were more balanced and weren't trying to chop heads off. So you have here, the French monarchs were decapitated. LaRouche accuses the Synarchists, linked to Saint-Martin, of conflict control, controlling both sides and both kinds of trafficking. And that is why LaRouche was against Rock, but Zappa, then you come in, but Roxy says Zappa saves the music and proclaims, as Mozart did, that he was in charge and against substance abuse. So Zappa was same program as LaRouche on the drug point. The Synarchies control the program, but Mozart rebels. There's always a new revolution of music with a big change. There is a legend that Mozart and Marie Antoinette met as children and wanted to marry. Then you say the rock star Mozart meets the Emperor Joseph, brother of Marie Antoinette,
yeah, this is from the film of Mozart, because there are like chronicles of, you know, people writing what happened that day, and maybe just to show a little that Joseph was not as bad as other emperors. There was a job he wanted to offer to Mozart as chamber musician. It was not very well paid, because he had to write pieces for some ceremonies or official functions. But Mozart didn't want it to limit himself to be a servant and just do music for parties or for ceremonial rituals.
Entertainment.
Under Joseph, he could have more freedom, use German for the operas and talk about other type of stories, not only the dramas of the Italian opera of everybody killing themselves and the love and this and that. He really wanted to express higher ideals, higher goals. And
LaRouche called it cultural optimism. The bad guys made dark, pessimistic music around the idea that man was a tragic beast. So it was revolutionary to actually bring in a language that the people might understand. In other words, German, and make that the content of their musical productions. Now you say, Zappa said all good music was already made by people with wigs and stuff. So Frank is making fun of music that has taste. And that was done by the Wiggs guy. And Frank says that frees him to make non-music or to make an ear entertainment that was multisensory and synesthetic, synesthesia. So, Zappa didn't, he wasn't saying that all good music was made by the past guys. He was being ironic there, I assume. Anyways, it meant Frank could make up music for himself. I'm making music for myself, he said. You know, you guys want music that's tasteful and sophisticated and snobbish. It's all been done for you. So you have here, but Mozart's work was sublime.
Zappa loved music, all types of music, and I don't think he will not like Mozart. What I think he was against was this academic rules that come from that time, the formulas for modulating and for endings and all these things, and he will not limit himself to follow these formulas. But I cannot believe that he didn't like Mozart, because I mean, as a musician, you have
Part of the reason he may not have liked it is his father tried to ram that music down Frank's throats. And in the book by Frank's brother, there was a constant debate, yelling, screaming at each other between Frank and his father. So if his father liked that music, Frank wasn't going to go for it. So he definitely, Zappa fans, people who know about Zappa's life, said, no, Roxy, he hated that music. But LaRouche helps to make it more sophisticated what goes on in the battle between Aristotle and Plato in music. And then you can see Zappa was following Mozart's method. In other words, the form, not the content. And Zappa may not like the content of 1800s music. And he does a whole book on Francesco Zappa, a guy who lived at times with Mozart and is always putting Mozart down in the play Them or Us. Yeah, Them or Us.
With the Sinclavier, he made a record with the Francesco Zappa music.
Yes,
which is called Francesco Zappa.
Gail found all this music. Right, they found all the music because he was listed in the Groves Dictionary of Musicians. Gail, somebody found that guy, so they got all, they found and acquired Francesco Zappa's music made from 1763 to 1788, the same years that Frank flourished, 1963 to 1988, and he got the Sinclavier to reproduce that music, as was written in the manuscripts. But let's bring this up to date. What is your point about Zappa, Mozart, the battle against the synarchists, and today? How does that relate to today?
Yes, because I was listening to the rant in which you're asking, why, and you're talking about all these hidden ground and many topics you told me you didn't ask Ion about. And I think Mozart and Zappa and Sarah, they were really trying to understand hidden ground and to share what they knew with the audience and really trying to change the situation by affecting their environment as much as they could, being this type of new creator that is the Ionic idea of not art, because art is puny compared to what we are going to be doing in programming our kingdoms, right, or environments. And they were already somehow seeing what is going to come and trying to achieve that. But they were still, I suppose, not ascended. Anyway, they managed to influence.
And they were fighting. And here's the thing. The synarchists some of the synarchists that Mozart and them are fighting against are ascended people. Like the
right.
Martin, Saint-Martin, and the Germain, Saint-Germain people. So that's where it gets complicated. So you sent me a summary of the Magic Flute, which is about this question, because Mozart were Masons. So it says the Magic Flute is noted for its prominent Masonic elements. Schikaneder and Mozart were Masons and Lodge brothers, as was Ignaz Alberti, engraver and printer of the first libretto of the Magic Flute, you know, by Mozart. The opera is also influenced by Enlightenment philosophy, and it can be regarded as an allegory advocating enlightened absolutism. So it's like they recognize, well, it has to be some kind of authority, but it can be an enlightened authority. But that's because the printing press and the newspaper were inspiring them to new scenarios for distributing information. So they were trying to bring in the new media, like Comenius, trying to use the new media and spread concepts to the average person. So you have here, the Queen of the Night represents a dangerous form of obscurantism, or according to some, the anti-Masonic Roman Catholic Empress Maria Theresa, or the Church itself. So they're saying obscurantism came out of Empress Maria Theresa and the Church itself. Even though they were anti-Masons. Now, if you listen to someone like Robert Anton Wilson, he'd talk about all the ideals of the Freemasons became the content of the Industrial Revolution, the humanist ideals, that some of the Freemasons were for that. And so the Freemasons won.
Do you remember when Gail died, Moon published a picture of the Frank's library, and he had a lot of Mason books.
He had the whole collection.
So he
had
was
all the 30 books.
Studying these secret societies and
right.
the hidden ground.
And he was rational about it. He didn't. He wrote plays about it called The Grand Wazoo. He satirized it, but he also recognized that you couldn't get rid of authority or that kind of social mortar control completely. So maybe that's where he wasn't ascended. An ascended attitude comes out of Ion, which is basically anarchy. It says it supports anarchy. No laws. Zappa was still practical. So the confusion, though, is you have the Freemasons are okay because they're using the new technologies to make everybody have a better life. But then there are certain factions in the Freemasons who aligned with the old-fashioned monarchists who didn't like the Industrial Revolution. So it gets all mixed up in different angles. And what Ion has brought in is the ascended person factor. That has never been spelled out in history. So, you know, here's Mozart, a Freemason, representing the appropriate industrial ideals of Freemasonry, and he's up against other Freemasons or non-Freemasons who may actually be ascended people. Empress Maria Theresa, her antagonist, Sarastro, symbolizes the enlightened sovereign who rules according to principles based on reason, wisdom, and nature. Now, at the same time, you have the industrial goals coming in with the printing press. You have people like William Blake saying, no, this is going to lead nowhere. So you have another level of people criticizing this new apparently enlightened understanding of taking the benefits of technology. But there's a faction against that. LaRouche tries to figure out who's doing what, and basically says the pro-technology gang are the Platonists, and the anti-technology gang, that would be William Blake, are the Aristotelian people who want to bring back a dark age. So you got here, Mozart is against the obvious oligarch, the empress, and then he has another king that would represent Marie Antoinette's brother. The story itself portrays the education of mankind progressing from chaos, that's the serpent, symbolized by the serpent, through religious superstition, that would be the queen and the ladies, to rationalistic enlightenment, that's Sarastro and the priests. And by means of trial and error, ultimately to make the earth a heavenly kingdom and mortals like the gods. Then you say that particular couplet with those words is sung in the finales to both acts. Mozart includes satire and humor to make it attractive to a wider audience of non-aristocrats. In the people's language, Mozart's goal was to transmit the ideas of liberty, emancipation, fraternity, and love. The parrots sing about the highest feeling, love. Now, what's interesting, you come to the 20th century, and after World War II, a lot of the radical thinkers, like Adorno, find that the concentration camps are just too much to take, and they start to question the whole Enlightenment philosophy that led to, they think, World War II, the ideas. So you have a whole branch of postmodern thinkers, they're called postmodernists, who are retrieving, from LaRouche's point of view, synarchist ideas. So the bad part of synarchy, the anti-human part, is what LaRouche is battling. But we, here in Iandam, are including the useful synarchists, or the people that funded the synarchists. So are you aware of this complexity, what we're talking about, Roxy, right?
Yes, that's why...
contradictions here.
We try to present these things, because this is like the layers of the layers of the layers of history, of the secret history, of things that Ion has told us, and how this connects with America and the New Atlantis and the New Jerusalem and Saint Germain and
if you read Zappa closely,
we're connections that connect them all to Bob.
Yes, it comes back to me eventually,
like,
but well, what was good is that the very people that we're talking about, McLuhan and Zappa and others and LaRouche, were brought together by me. That was already stated 25 years ago before Ion showed up. Now, is Ion following Bob's hologram? That's for you guys to figure out. But the when you read Zappa and see what he said in his interviews, you can't categorize him as a Platonist or an Aristotelian. He's more moderate, more involved, more aware of the complexities. He used to talk about the very operation of becoming president was a Byzantine bureaucracy. And that's right. McLuhan wrote about that too. You had to link back to the oligarchs. What do they call the electors? What's that thing called? I forget what that thing. Yeah, the electoral college that oversees the election. So you have this oligarchy, and Ion says that Obama became president thanks to the Daughters of the Revolution. I don't know if they're called the Daughters of the American Revolution or just Daughters of the Revolution. The elite women around Lynn Cheney and people like that, I guess, were into making America's image better, so they foisted Obama on people. So the way my chart is you look at this, you look at Mozart, or you look at Zappa, and you project the LaRouche agenda on them, the McLuhan agenda, the William Henry Thompson agenda, the Croker agenda, and the Dobbs agenda, and then the Ion agenda. You mix all six levels to understand what's going on. And that's what we're trying to do with this emphasis on Zappa, how he was aware of this complexity and actually made music illustrating it and predicting Ion and me, predicting Bob.
Yes, as you say, we take these different persons in different quadrants and try to explain this phenomenon, the Zappa phenomenon related to Iondom, through these different filters of thinking and knowledge. Like,
yeah,
now we're
talking about
LaRouche and what he's saying.
Right, and we can use McLuhan or we can William Irwin Thompson it. Now, I think Bert's here. Is that you, Bert?
Yes. Yes, Bob. Hey, Bob, I'm blown away. I've been listening to you.
Yes.
And I've been
good.
Reading LaRouche
been here.
This
Listen.
Week and listening to Zappa. This week, I've been reading some LaRouche
very
listening
good.
To Zappa, and I felt the connection of just listening to Zappa doing some interviews. So it's really cool to hear you and Roxanne discuss this. It's really nice.
Yeah, you're tuned in as usual, Bert. You're doing the right things, preparing, Ion guiding you. Now, you see, if you read the musical theories of LaRouche, you'll see that Zappa acts him out. But, you know, LaRouche would not like Frank. So the value of LaRouche is that he tells you about this historical battle. There's nowhere, maybe now on the Internet, but LaRouche wrote these articles that Roxanne is talking about, the Synarchists and the Martinists, St. Martin gang. He wrote them back 20 years ago. So when Ian was talking about, to me, the St. Martin family, I immediately remembered the LaRouche quadrant stuff. And so I knew that, but I didn't know how Ian was going to talk about them. So here's LaRouche giving the history. It was an important understanding of the connections over 300 years. But then we listened to Frank deal with the present that LaRouche hasn't got a perfect handle on.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, when I used to talk to the LaRouches, they didn't know that I brought LaRouche over. And remember, I forgot to read you Licio Gelli's history. Licio Gelli, who Zappa mentions in his writings. We needed to talk a bit about Licio Gelli at some point tonight, because he's the linchpin between the Synarchists and other people. But what was I going to say? The LaRouche's people, I'd often be in New York City and go to their headquarters in New York, and I would have bought some Frank Zappa bootlegs, okay? So I'd walk into LaRouche's headquarters and meet with the elite, and they'd always say, "Well, Bob, what's in the bag there?" And I knew they'd ask, and I'd pull out the Zappa albums. And these would be educated baby boomers. Some of them are even music critics. And they say, why are you listening to him? I said, well, because he's acting out LaRouche's ideas. Yeah. And then they go, "You're always saying ridiculous things, Bob. Why do you come around here?" Then they get mad, you know. And they didn't try to insult me. And I would stand by what I'd say. But they would say, "We're going to educate the zap out of you," which turned out to be what the police beat up the Vaclav Havel in Czechoslovakia, saying, "We're going to beat the Zappa out of you." That's what the police said to those guys in Czechoslovakia, you know, before the Velvet Revolution. Well, LaRouche said the same thing to me. So on the surface, people could say, "Oh, LaRouche is a fascist." He definitely had Nazi people around him. This is what was funny. LaRouche would be exposing, you know, certain Nazis, but he'd have a couple of Nazis in his own organization funding him. So I understood that that's like the Secret Council 10. And McLuhan said, corporations have utterly unlike entities on the main board, on the board of the chairman and all that, because there were so many environments that brought in different groups historically that you would have a contradictory, hypocritical mixture. You'd have the Nazis from the radio era. You'd have the Bolsheviks from the telegraph area. You'd have the Freemasons from the manuscript era or the printing press era. And then you'd have British intelligence. So this is the way every corporation was, all the different factions. And then the Android meme replayed that. So this is the education I'm for, how to be like Bert and listen to Frank and read LaRouche. Nobody in the world does that unless they've passed through Dobbstown. Bert, you have to realize the unique position you're in.
Well, yeah, it's fun because you get to see things really differently, because having grown up in the 70s, and Miss Zappa, and now to be able to read what LaRouche, because I remember seeing a lot of LaRouche literature when I was young, in the, you know, where they would pass the stuff out, and now to be so many years later to be able to read this and know what it really is, it's mind-blowing every week.
Yeah, it's your own life coming back to you, looking through the kaleidoscope differently. You're looking at LaRouche literature when you were a kid and not knowing what 40 years later you'd be talking to the guy that helped spread that literature.
Yes.
Me.
It all links back. It all links back. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Bob, I want to say something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just real quick. I listened to last week when you were talking to Ion, and you asked Ion about was music the first form, the static form after the fall, and he said yes. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That rung a lot of bells. That's a lot of questions there for me. But anyway, go ahead.
Well,
sorry.
Pleasure.
I just wanted to bring that up.
The fallen, the ascended person, that's important. Zappa was operating on that level. He'd undermined the musical experience while being a great musician. Because on the level of the ascended, yeah. I mean, McLuhan has a quote from Mozart. He was asked what music he liked. He said, no music. He didn't like music, or he wouldn't consume it. He wouldn't use it to assuage his fallen man desires or boredom and that. He was not using it as a drug. He was using it as an educational tool, as Roxy says, to probe the people, to enhance them. So he's using the environment to numb people to the new environment, but at the same time, hopefully they get to see through it. So Ion says the ascended person has no desires. It's not wallowing in the senses. And that's why, I don't know if I played this part, beneath the tonalities, beneath the frequencies, there is nothing. Did you hear me play that part last week? There is a nothingness, which could be the Hindu void.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. beneath all models of matter, there is a vibrant nothingness. And I referred to it again today in something I said, Diane. I can't remember right this second, but the nothingness. Oh, yeah, the dream that dreams your dreams, that's the first dream is inside the nothingness. You get that, Roxy? That the first hypnosis is the first dream. That's the level of frequency and tonalities, the Gurdjieffian octaves that control the being. But the ascended being is not controlled by those points.
But, you know, that sparks the thing about LaRouche. That sparks something I just discovered and I'm still reading. Right, and there was an article that I read yesterday. Yes, and he promotes this guy that I need to read a little more on, this Vladimir Vanatsky in geology, and there's a reference to what you just explained musically. This Vanatsky uses it on another front from geology and talking about space and symmetry and asymmetry and how you asymmetry.
Well, he's the real guy who came up with noosphere. Vanatsky is the guy who invents the noosphere, and then the Jesuits hijack Vanatsky and say Pierre Teilhard de Chardin came up with noosphere. They try to name their guy as the inventor of the noosphere. But Chardin's noosphere is Aristotelian, whereas Vernadsky's is Platonic. And what that means is that the ideas, the thoughts, the non-material thinkings is what reality is, not the sensory categories, not the stuff that Aristotle comes up with. So LaRouche, in an intellectual way, is supporting Ion, going for the non-sensory as the ground of being. That's what you would have just read.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. I mean, it was really funny how I got onto LaRouche, because the first thing that he has some theories, and not to go off on a tangent, but he has some theories about what's taking place from China, and he uses his paranoid position of the British. So he has this whole theory that he's supporting, that the whole fall of the Chinese stock market is...
Yeah, destabilization by the British. And who are the British? When you read the historical data, what does he mean? He doesn't mean the British people. He does mean the oligarchy in the City of London. But the British are the synarchists. They go back 500 or more years. He has different names for the same elite. So the synarchists that Roxy's talking about are the British. But it's an international cosmopolitan elite. And then, see, when I was first talking to Ion, I found it puzzling that he would go on about Queen Victoria and these very stupid oligarchies that I had been met personally through the Chief Council 10, but also intellectually he didn't agree with them. And I eventually figured out, I think, I haven't got it confirmed, that Ion purposely took these people and rubbed them in my face. he'd say, "You're doing the Lindy, Bob, you know, hanging out and being mad at Queen Victoria." But I would make a big deal of how ascended Queen Victoria was, which was a counter to the images I had in my mind. And Ian was trying to show us the secret part of the elites, who I had brushed up against but did not fully understand. Or maybe I did fucking know, and as you know, I'm running this whole fucking thing, so you're talking to an extremely ascended person right now who's pretending to be one of you guys, but that's my art, right?
Yes.
I pretend to be among the people. I'm speaking in English. Mozart would try to do it in German. But it's pretty funny, the situation here, where I come out of this elite position, and then Ian is out elitizing me. But then in the end says, "Well, Bob, all these people that I've gradually got you to be impressed with, they all work for you." We're still trying to figure out what kind of weird blind spot I put myself into. What kind of amnesia have I, what disease am I a victim of?
Yes, everybody's trying to
Bert,
make you remember.
Yes. What did you say? Your first words? Everybody's attempting to help.
Everybody's trying
yeah.
to make
no,
you
good point.
Remember.
Bob, remember. That's what I mean. When Bob gets it, then everybody can get it. But we have to let little Bob get it at some point. It's going to take a long time to get Bob to get it because Bob ain't paying attention. But Bert, I was thinking of you. I couldn't wait to play it. What, Roxy?
Yes, I was listening to Sun Ra, and I was so amazed of what we're saying now, that there is so much ionic in what he's saying. For example, in the start of the film, Space is the Place, he says, the music
well,
is different here,
I had
the vibration is different here, but the planet will be teleported with
this.
Music, with frequency. And I'm like, wow, that's so unique.
That's right.
And he also has a song called Deep Purple. Sunra.
Deep
and
Purple.
The group Deep
right.
Purple took its name from Deep Purple. That's your color. And Deep Purple right. make this smoke.
On the water.
Smoke water? On the water.
On the water.
Fire on
smoke
the
water.
Side.
Yeah.
Because they went to a prize and somebody...
Yeah, you know what the smoke on the water is about, Bert.